We will be speaking about the issue of Mashiach, life after death, trying to understand, get a bit of a perspective on how that works. This is a contemporary issue. People are still focused on a Jewish perspective on this, and especially on the Messianic question in recent times, and really in the last 300-400 years, on and off from time to time, there have been major Messianic surges of Jewish excitement. We need to get a bit of a handle, at least from some perspective, on how that works, and whether they are reasonable, unreasonable, and how to assess them. I'm going to skip around here. I'm not going to do every single source on the sheet, but I want you to come away with a good understanding of a Jewish, at least one Jewish perspective, or the two main Jewish perspectives on these whole issues. The first thing you have to understand is that fundamental to this whole discussion is that the human being is a composite creature, is a body and soul, meaning that there is a physical and a non-physical part to the human being. This is no chiddush, there's nothing new here, you know this already. You see this from number one, from the pasuk in Bereishis, V'yitzar Hashem Elokim et ha'adam, afar min ha'adama. God created the man as dust from the ground, V'yipach ba'apav, and he blew into his nostrils nishmas chayim, the soul of life, V'yadam lefesh ha'chayim, the man was a living creature. This is unique in the creation of the world. Daniel, you got one of these? In the sense that when it comes to creating the animals, God doesn't create the animals directly. God says to the ground, you bring animals out. And God says to the sea, you bring the sea animals out. You deal with that. And the ground and the sea, if you like, to use a word which perhaps I shouldn't use, evolve into different creatures. I'm not getting into the evolution debate, although it's not something which is necessarily incompatible with the whole Bereishis story. We don't read it fundamentally or in a fundamentalist way. So when it comes to man, there's a difference. God takes two elements, the physical, dust from the ground, and the spiritual breath of, if you like, God, his own breath, what these mean symbolically, I'm not going to get into now, and create the creature of man. And I brought you two sources in number two and number three, the idea of these two things coming together, the Spirit of God representing the essence of God from his own soul, etc., etc. Therefore, what you end up with is two needs. There's a physical need, the body needs to go into the ground, and the where it came from, and the soul needs to return to its source as well. Have a look, please, here, to skip for a second, to source number five. When Adam and Chava eat from the fruit of the tree, so one of the curses, one of the things that happens to them, is for source number five. V'zeyat apecha toichol lechem. You will eat bread by the sweat of your brow, ad shuvcha al adam, until you go back into the ground, ki mimenu lukachta, because you were made from the ground, ki afa ata, you are dust, v'al afa tashuv, and you will return to the dust. The two things have to go together, and that's why we see in Koheles, in number 6, the pasuk that says, v'yashav ha'afa al ha'aretz kishehaya, the body, the dirt, the physical element of man, of a person, goes back into the ground. Va'ruach tashuv elokim asher natasa, and the spirit goes back to God from whence it came. There's nothing new here. This is all standard stuff. I expect that all religions say the same thing, that there's a spiritual and a physical part of the human being, and each returns to its original source. Now, but to understand this, when we talk about Olam Haba, and this is really where we get into the clarification. What does Olam Haba mean? Let me ask you first, before you look at my sheet. When I say Olam Haba, what do you understand by that? What do you mean by that? When you say the world to come, what's your, verbalize what you're thinking? Mashiach? Is the world to come?
No?
Where you go when you die. Your soul. Okay?
It's not where you go, where is it?
Okay. Okay, so you want to say it's Olam, that's Olam HaNeshamot, the world of souls. Whereas for you, Olam Haba is what?
The future world when Mashiach.
So we have a couple of takers for Mashiach, and we have a few other people talking about the world of the souls. But the word this in itself represents the slight confusion a little bit in people's minds. What is Olam Haba? It's on some level something which is to come, which we don't have yet. But what is it? If you look in, it's an extract from the Shacharis on Shabbos morning, we say the following tefillah in number 7. Go to page 2. Enkercha ve'en zulasecha, efes biltecha, midomilach. says, you know, nothing is like you, nothing is like you, nothing is like you, and nothing is like you, basically. Okay? Nothing is like you, God, in this world. Nothing has the same status of you in this world. Olam hazeh, that's easy. Olam hazeh is what we're in right now. Ve'ein zulat chamakenu, nothing compares to you, our king, l'chayei ha'olam haba, in the life of the world to come. Efes biltecha goaleinu, nothing compares to you, our redeemer, limot ha'mashiach, for the days of Mashiach. Ve'ein doyme lecha, nothing is similar to you, Moshiachenu, our Savior, letchiat hameitim, in the resurrection of the dead. It seems to divide it into four. Olam hazeh, olam haba, yimot ha-mashiach, and tchiat hameitim. Okay? This seems to be a support for those of you that said that olam haba was the world of the soul, rather than the world of Mashiach, but we'll see, actually olam haba is an expression used for both. Now, let's talk about the soul world for a second, and then we'll get into Yom HaMashiach, which is perhaps more contemporary. What is the Jewish attitude towards Olam Haba? So the Rambam says in Hilchas Tshuva, and he talks about the next world, he clarifies a few important things. Maybe someone could volunteer to read the English in source number 8. Yes, Mira, why don't you read the English, and we'll see where we go from there.
In the world to come, there will be no physical body, but rather the souls of the righteous alone, without a body, like the Malachim.
So the first thing he says is, in the world to come, there is no physicality. So if you're thinking about a world to come full of candies, you know, beer, 72 virgins, I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what you're thinking of in the world to come, depending on your religious persuasion. Just forget about it. That's not what we mean by Olam Haba. Yeah.
Doesn't the wrong call day in Derech Hashem that there is a
We'll talk about that. So first of all, the Rambam says the souls of the righteous without a body, like the Malachim, just like a Malach is an emanation of God, on some level separate from God, but entirely without physical form. A Malach cannot be physical, just as God is not physical. So you and I will be some kind of outgrowth of God, connected to God, but without physical form. Nobody knows, by the way, what the world to come is like. There's a general principle we see in the Pasuk, Ayin lo ra'ata, no eye ever saw it, no one ever went there and came back. And so we know that there is a world to come from different sources, you know, that we saw what Pasuk says, the soul goes, returns, etc. But the exact understanding of what the world next world is like is beyond our comprehension completely, because it exists on a plane which we cannot in any way relate to. We cannot relate to a non-physical world. We cannot relate to a world without time. We don't understand what it means, a world without time. In fact, we talk about the next world in temporal terms, which is clearly wrong. People talk about, you know, they're going, you know, someone's died and they're going to go and greet them when they die. They're waiting for them on some level. I understand why people will say that, but it doesn't actually make any sense if you think about it. In a world which is beyond time, you don't wait for other people to come to you. If you think about it, when a person dies and goes to a world without time, everybody is already dead. They're already there. Including your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren who haven't been born yet. What does that mean? We don't understand what that means. We can't relate to that. We can't relate to a world without time. We don't really have any understanding. Clearly, apart from the most basic things, like philosophically, it's a world without bodies. Carry on.
Since yes. There will be no bodies, there will be no eating or drinking or any of the things that a person's body requires in this world.
Okay.
Rather, the tzaddiki will sit with their crowns on their heads.
A physical thing.
And enjoy the radiance of the Shekhinah.
There was two physical things. Sitting, which you can't do without legs and knees, and crowns on your heads, which are two physical things on your head. So what does any of this mean? So carry on.
And when it says that the righteous will sit, this is allegorical, i.e. the righteous will be present there without work.
Oh, it should have been there with an R-E, excuse me. They'll be present there without any work or effort. Don't worry about that. Sorry about that. It means that there is no sense of becoming in the next world. There's only a sense of being. This world is a sense always of movement. There's always a sense of going from a place to a place. We have a system which we call the halakha. What's the halakha mean literally? The walking, the moving, the movement. We talk about the derech Hashem, the Derech Eich HaChaim, the route towards something. Whenever you say to someone in Hebrew, go in peace, you never say Lech B'Shalom. You say Lech L'Shalom. Go towards peace because you're always moving. When a person dies, then you say the Kaver Lech B'Shalom. go in peace, because that's it. They are what they created of themselves in their life, and from then on, it's a world without without becoming. It's a world of being. Second.
Half of their head. This means that the knowledge they have and through which they
merit
life in the next world is present with them and serves as their crown.
So he says then that when he talks about the crowns on their heads, of course you don't have a head and you don't have a crown in the next world. So the Rambam says that when you have a crown on your head in the next world, obviously it doesn't mean a physical crown. It means the knowledge, the mind, the personality that you created for yourself, that is you in the next world. You don't have a, you know, flesh, and you don't have a brain, because the brain is also like flesh, but you do have the you that makes you you. The personality, the brain, the millions of tiny little things that make you you in your head, that's you in the next world. The knowledge that you have, that's why for the Rambam, by the way, getting your head straight in this world is perhaps the most important thing. Because mitzvahs and aveiras, okay, you do mitzvahs, you do aveiras, there's a, you know, but if your head's not right, so your head is you, that's the whole you in the next world. The aveiras, you have to do tshuva, but your head is fundamental. Now, that's the Rambam. So the next world is a completely non-physical world, he says. There's no physicality whatsoever. The Ravid, who was one of the main commentators on the Rambam, lived along the same time as the Rambam, he jumps in, and we'll see soon, this is a theme which we'll see more and more of. Carry on.
The words of this man seem to me to be close to one who says that there is no resurrection for the body, but only for the soul.
In other words, he's worried that the Rambam seems to be denying a place for the resurrection of the body. Surely we believe that Olam Haba has some physical elements, you were saying before, that the body will come back to life. Isn't that a fundamental Jewish idea? So where's the Rambam talking about it? He doesn't mention it. Why doesn't he mention it? Surely he should have said, like, you go to the next world, and then your body comes back, and you have a big happy reunion, and everything gets back. He doesn't mention this. The rabbi is very unhappy. Carry on.
In my life, this was not the view of Chazal, who said in Kesubot, in the future, the righteous will stand in their clothes, and the crown could be taken literally and not as an allegory.
You're saying no. There is a physical Olam Haba, the body and the soul together. And the question is, does the Rambam agree with this? Does the Rambam agree that there is such a thing as Tchias HaMeisim? And if so, what is the purpose of that? Why would you come back to life? How long are you coming back to life for? Is that central to Judaism? Do we believe that? Do we have to believe that? We'll get there. So the first thing you have to understand is Olam Haba is, at least for the Rambam, a non-physical world. And maybe for other people, some physical, non-physical combination, which we'll talk more about soon. Let's talk about Mashiach for a few minutes. Because people often confuse Mashiach. What is Mashiach, etc.? Now, I'd like a volunteer to read number 9. Someone who can read nicely. Yes, please.
Yes.
Now, read nicely and loudly and clearly so that my machine will pick it up here. Okay? So that you will be immortalized on the web forever.
Do not think that in the Messianic age, any aspect of the world's nature will change, or that there will be new rules of nature.
Oh, that's the first thing the Rambam says. What is your view of Yemush Mashiach? Before we read the Rambam, let me ask you, I mean, don't be swayed by what you just read in the Rambam. Think about what you think. When I talk about Mashiach, what are the kind of things that go through your head? What do you think is happening when Mashiach comes? Anyone?
Beit
HaMikdash. Peace.
Eden on.
The Gan Eden. What do you mean by Gan Eden?
Like this kind of this kind of like lovely little society where we all kind of
have clarity.
Yeah. Like
walking around. Your ancestors will be coming back to greet you and to be with you. That's what you think. Okay, I'm not saying whether you're right or wrong or anything like that. What about the Sydneyans? What do you think about Mashiach? People talk about Mashiach. Sydney is a big place for Mashiach, right? The whole Sydney, you know. When people talk about Mashiach, what do you think? Yeah.
One of my friends the other day was having questions, and they said that when the Mashiach comes, they lose all sense of life.
You have no freedom of choice. Why would you have no freedom of choice? And what does he do to remove your freedom of choice? According to that particular view, what would happen?
He makes everything like
perfect. Right. There's no even choice to do an Aveira anymore because everything's like so obvious. God's, if you like, in your face, you might think. Yeah. Yeah, like Teddy was saying, all your, you know, tzaddikim coming out of their graves, which is pretty kind of unusual. All the kind of thing that happens right now.
I've heard that like the world becomes flat, like all the mountains and everything becomes like.
Wow, I never heard that. So the flat Earth people will be. They will have their day.
Well, that's how like
how everyone can be here together is because, like, the earth will just spread out and...
Wow. Okay, fine. I hear new things all the time. Yes.
Infinite pleasure.
Infinite pleasure. That sounds good. Meaning what? Actually, you don't have to tell me. You're working on your You can keep that to yourself. You can send me an email. But infinite pleasure. Okay.
Well, because they like going off that, because they say that like a pleasure here is like a millionth of a pleasure in
Olam Haba, meaning Olam Haba means what? The next world, or soul world, or the Mashiach world?
Or both.
Or both? Oh, okay. So, I want to just tell you what the Rambam says. The Rambam says very clearly that only two or three of the answers that I just heard now are correct. It says, world peace? Yes. People living based on Mikdash? Yes. Okay? But flat earth? Sorry. And people springing out of their graves? So the Rambam, it's not happening.
No,
okay?
Wait. People will not jump from the base of the team?
Not in Mr. Mashiach, says the Rambam. And people.
No,
it's destroyed all. One second. we'll get there, Rivka. We'll get there. Infinite pleasure? Sorry. That's not for you, Mr. Mashiach. That maybe is for the soul world. Think about this idea of being connected in a non-physical way to God. When he talks about, the Mishnah talks about, the next world is worth all the pleasures in this world, that's talking about the soul world, says the Rambam. But look at Mashiach. Now, please, if I thought you were just reading, read again from the beginning. Do not think.
Okay. Do not think that in the Messianic age, any aspect of the world's nature will change, or that there will be new rules of nature. Rather, the world will continue on its normal way.
So the first thing the Rambam says is normal world, standard world, regular, no miracles, no resurrection of the dead in Mashiach necessarily. Everything is normal. You still have to get through the traffic to get to work in the morning, and you're still going to have people who are sick, and you need to, you know, go to the hospital, and you need to find cures for medications and all that kind of stuff. All of that will be exactly like it is today. Carry on.
Although Isaiah says, and the wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the goat. These are metaphors and parables.
The nature of the animal kingdom won't change such that all of the animals are now pally-pally and friendly with each other. No, because the world will continue in its normal way, and all the animals will still eat each other the way they do today. So what does it mean?
They mean that Israel will live in peace with the wicked Gentiles, who are compared to wolves and leopards.
No, he's not saying that all non-Jewish people are wicked. He's saying that there are people in the world who want to kill us. He's absolutely right. He was right then, and he'd be right today. There are millions of people in the world who are trying to kill not just us, but each other. They've got missiles, and they've got rockets, and they've got mortars which are aimed at each other and fired at each other. We sit here today, don't want to worry you girls, but we sit here today with hundreds of missiles pointing towards us, just waiting for some guy to decide to press a button. It's a myth. Mamash and Nath that we're even here. So that says, remember, that's what changes. What changes in the Muslim Mashiach is human nature changes. Human nature changes. Because human nature changes, the world changes. If the world changes, the human nature changes, then a lot can change. Carry on.
They will all return to the true faith and no longer steal or desire.
Destroy, actually.
Destroy is yes. Where you're talking. Okay. So too, all such prophecies of this nature concerning Mashiach are metaphors in the Messianic era. Everyone will know.
Is it not very clear? I'm sorry.
Everyone will know to what the parable refers and to what things they hinted.
Right. In other words, we don't know exactly what's going to be in Mashiach, but we do have some fairly good ideas because the Nevi'im, the book, the Tanakh, is full of prophecies about what's going to be in the future. So the Rambam, all these prophecies are about Mashiach. They're not about the world to come. The world to come, we don't really know anything about the soul world. But the world of Mashiach, that we do know. And he talks about these ideas of world peace, etc. For the Rambam, what changes when Mashiach comes is our attitude. And with our attitude change, you can change a lot of things. For example, the Rambam has two entire chapters at the end of his Halakha Sefer dedicated to Mashiach. And in those two chapters, if we had more time, I would spend more time, and we only have another 30 minutes now. But in those chapters, he says things like as follows. In the days of Mashiach, there will be no more hunger. There will be no more hunger. Ah, isn't that a miracle? The answer is no. Why are there hungry people today? Because we don't share the food. It's as simple as that. There's no reason for there to be anybody hungry today. We just need to share the food. We just need to spend a little bit less on this and a little bit more on that. Imagine if all the money that's being spent on weapons developments and killing people, if all that money was dedicated to cancer research, then there'd be an awful lot less cancer around. Now, that doesn't mean there needs to be a miracle. That's just a human change of attitude. That's the Rambam's Yemos HaMashiach. Now, on a certain level, it is a miracle that the people could do that, that people could change their view so much, but it's not a supernatural miracle. It's that the Rambam's perception of Mashiach. He says elsewhere, in terms of the resurrection of the dead, he believes in that. He's going to talk about that in a minute. But he says it could be before Mashiach, during Mashiach, after Mashiach. Rivka, don't worry. The Rambam subscribes to this idea of people coming back from the dead. But he says it's got nothing to do with Mashiach. Mashiach could come and that could happen thousands of years later. It could happen before Mashiach comes. It could happen when Mashiach's here. And by the way, he says Mashiach will die. Mashiach's a normal person. He's just a great leader. He's a great Torah sage. He leads the world to this new utopic state. But of course Mashiach will get old. Mashiach will die. And then son of Mashiach. And then grandson of Mashiach. And then the whole set of a political process. He also says there's going to be a political state. There has to be a state of the Jewish people, which come together and they build the Beit HaMikdash, etc., etc. He has a whole extended discussion of what has to happen, but it's a political process and it's a natural process. Yes, Taylor.
I have two questions. First, so he says that with Mashiach, we're not instantly going to get the Beit HaMikdash.
Because one of the things the Mashiach has to do is to build the Beit HaMikdash. But of course, in a world without miracles, don't expect the Beit HaMikdash to come floating down from heaven, like it said in some other sources. No, how will you build the Beit HaMikdash?
You
put a bulldozer up there and you build it. What's going to happen with the Dome of the Rock? Okay, so that comes with a world of peace. We'll work that out.
And my second question is, how do we know that Olam Haba is not a world with Mashiach already there? How do we know?
What do you mean? When you say Olam Haba, define what you mean by Olam Haba.
We're saying it's this new place where there's no physical bodies
Well, Mashiach can't exist in the place of a physical body because Mashiach is a man. You can't have a man in a world of non-physicality.
But someone said that there it could be that physical body.
Fine.
So how do we know that there's actually, except for you said Tefillah, but how do we know?
Good. So you read where it says commentary of the Rive of Now. Read what it says.
But doesn't the Torah itself say, "I will remove dangerous animals from the land"?
The same rivers that turned around and said before, "What you're talking about a non-physical world to come? Surely the body and the soul have to live together." The same rivers and the same school of thought. It's not just the rivers; it's a whole school of thought. Says, no. It clearly says, "I will remove dangerous animals from the land." That's a miracle. What do you mean? There's going to be no more dangerous animals? In other words, there are two views on Mashiach, just like there are two views on Olam Haba. There are two views on Mashiach. One view is this view of the Rambam, which is a view where the human race, if you like, changes itself, and therefore God sends Mashiach as a result of that. Another view is a miraculous view, with the Beit HaMikdash coming down from Shemaim, and miracles happening, and people coming up from the dead, and all the world changing, and all the laws of nature changing, etc. The Rambam rejects that completely. Why does the Rambam reject that, by the way? He says he's not making this up. He takes passages from the Gemara. Look in number 10. There's Gemara. Well, actually, he brings the Gemara. He's quoting the Chachamim. Amru Chachamim, Ein bein olam hazeh li'imot haMashiach. There's no difference between this world and imot haMashiach ela shibud malchus bilvad. Other than the oppression of the nations. The oppression of the other nations over the Jewish people and over other nations. Think of how many people machete each other to death every year, all over the world, in Africa and other places. Once that stops, that's Yemos HaMashiach. But otherwise, there's no difference between this world and the next world. And he's reflecting a position in Chazal. The other view, which is of a supernatural Mashiach, is reflecting another view in Chazal. Yes?
So, based on going with the Rambam.
Yes.
And he's saying that there's, a normal person who's going to be Mashiach, a great leader. Obviously not just, whatever, normal person.
Yes,
Mashiach, and then he dies, and then he continues. How is it he guaranteeing that state is going to last? So if you've had great leaders, and then, their sons aren't great, or their, children aren't great.
Fine. The Rambam actually says in the Halachas there, if someone comes along and he does this, and this, he's a great Torah sage, then he may be Mashiach. Mm-hmm. But if someone actually built the Beit HaMikdash, ushers in this world, era of world peace, etc., then you know for sure this is the person that is the Mashiach, and then there's no turning back from that. But he has to have done all those things before there is, where you could turn around and say there's no turning back. But our nevuah is that that's it. There will be no turning back from there. You say, it's never worked in the past because we never had Mashiach in the past. We've never had this situation of world peace. That's our understanding. All of our sources talk about that. That's why in Christianity didn't convince the Jews that Jesus was the Mashiach, because none of these things happened when he came. So therefore they say, oh, well, he's coming back. He's coming for a second coming. That's when it'll all happen. Say, okay, fine. I don't really argue with that. Look, you get one shot, and if you miss it, you miss it. So we have a second coming, a third coming, and a fourth coming. The Jews weren't receptive to that, and the Christian world was very unhappy with the lack of acceptance of the Jews. But they came from our sources here. Yes?
Is the Rambam the one that mentions the two Mashiachs?
No, the Rambam never talks about Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. This is a Kabbalistic idea that comes in, that there are two phases to Mashiach. There are those that want to read into the Rambam, but as far as I'm aware, the Rambam never refers explicitly to this idea. Of course, this Kabbalistic idea of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David can play out in many different ways. For example, you're familiar with this idea of Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David? Mashiach ben David is the Mashiach we're talking about here. Mashiach ben Yosef, just like this week's Parsha, right? Just like Yosef goes down into the exile to prepare the physical infrastructure for the spiritual revolution, so too there'll be a Mashiach ben Yosef that prepares the world physically for this incredible moment. That's why in the religious Zionist movement, the Dati Lumi movement, which at the end of the day is a messianic movement, and if they say they're not, they are, because when they stand up on Shabbos morning and make the prayer for Medinat Yisrael, it's Avinu Sheva Shamayim Tzu Yisrael V'Goalo, okay? Barechet Medinat Yisrael, the next words are?
Reshit
Tzmicha Geulateinu. This is the beginning of the flowering of our redemption, which is why, from a certain perspective, from a Dati Lumi perspective, the state of Israel is Mashiach ben Yosef. The state of Israel is the physical infrastructure, which means the Jewish police and the Jewish army and the grumpy old woman in Miskan Achnim that won't give you a visa, you know, and send you back because you've got the wrong papers. You're meant to look at this woman, you're meant to think, you're Mashiach ben Yosef. Like, you're meant to dance out of the offices there, think to yourself, this is the beginning of Mashiach, etc., etc. You're meant to feel like that. And the birth pangs of Mashiach and the wars of Mashiach, this is all part of the process there. Now, that's a messianic process. By the way, you can be Zionist without being messianically Zionist. You can say, I support Israel, I believe in Israel, I want to stand for Israel and join the army and fight for Israel. You don't have to necessarily subscribe to the idea that Israel is the beginning of a messianic process. Although people get very upset with you if you don't. But I'm not sure whether, I mean, my own background and teaching is very much to be Zionist, but not messianically Zionist. Okay, my own Rav in London, who very much is my mentor on these things, is himself very strongly Zionist, but he's not a messianist. Do you have to be a messianist? Maybe yes, maybe no. That's beside the point. But I'm saying that this Mashiach ben Yosef idea very much comes into it. Theodor Herzl, if you look in Rav Cook's obituary for Theodor Herzl when he died, he talks about Theodor Herzl being an emanation of Mashiach ben Yosef. That doesn't mean Theodor Herzl is Mashiach. I'm not saying that. He's saying the kind of political infrastructure Theodor Herzl laid down is the beginning of a messianic process. That's what he's saying. Okay? Yes.
A question. So when you were talking about the Ravad, and he says what I took from it, you said that it was kind of like miraculous by like taking away.
Right, right.
But isn't that a way also part of natural behavior in the world, like extinction, like if.
Well, except that the Beit HaMikdash coming down from Shamayim and people coming out of their graves, and these are supernatural events.
Well, those are, but like that concept.
You can't pick and choose. I mean, is either supernatural or it's natural.
So he's saying everything.
It's supernatural. Okay, all bets are off. And this is where you end up with the question of, I use my freedom of choice because everything's supernatural and I have miracles all around me. The Rambam will say, no, you lose your freedom of choice. Why is Mashiach there for the Rambam? So you can do more mitzvahs. That's the purpose of Mashiach. If we don't have to fight, and we don't have to, you know, deal with all the nonsense that we have to deal with in the world today because of all the fighting. So we can spend that time focusing, doing mitzvahs, helping people, growing, whatever. That's what Mashiach is for. On the contrary, not to take away our freedom of choice, but to actually give us more opportunity to exercise that. Yes?
Okay. Slightly a silly question. So you said Mashiach is like just a normal man, but like a great leader. A
are we gonna know like when he was born, like is there gonna be like a big boom around the world, or like that's it, he's coming, or is he gonna like just grow up a normal person and then like have a great following?
The Rambam says that there, I wish I could have time to learn the whole of the last two chapters of the Rambam with you, but he says specifically, he says there are many people who grow up that are potential Mashiachs, that could be Mashiach, but they failed to be Mashiach. What did it turn out they were? They were great leaders of Klal Yisrael, like past great leaders, but they weren't the real thing. So there's no magic boom when Mashiach is born. The Mashiach kind of evolves. Does Mashiach even know he's Mashiach? Probably not. Which really leads to the interesting... The answer is, he's a shopping list to do. He has to check these three boxes to be potentially Mashiach, be a great terror leader and lead people in a tshuva revolution, etc. And then he has to check these three boxes to be definitely the Mashiach. So the Beit HaMikdash, bring the Jewish people back to their land of Israel, establish a reign of world peace, etc., etc. So when you get into a discussion as to whether, let me talk about this contemporary issue for a second, whether the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Schneerson, was the Mashiach, potentially, and of course this is a big issue in the world today, because there are large numbers of people from the Chabad movement who have strong feelings on this issue. This is why.
Mashiach.
What's that?
There are people who think that he is Mashiach.
Okay, so I'm going to deal with that now. this is true all over the world, including, by the way, in Sydney, very much. There's a very big, strong Chabad, right, in Sydney? And all over the world, Chabad do incredibly good work with people and with communities, and they organize things that no one else wants to do. They go to places no one else wants to go. But as far as I'm aware, there are basically four groups, and you have to get this clear in your head, there are basically four groups of different people within this whole Chabad question. Now, how big these groups are, and who is running the show, that's an interesting question, which you'll get different views on. But there basically, it seems to me, and look, this is not the only analysis, this is my analysis, and there are books you can read that I can recommend on this, there are basically four groups. Group number one is a group within Chabad that say, look, the Rebbe was an incredible man, which he clearly was, a Torah sage of immense proportion, which is true, and had all the potential to be Mashiach. But he died, and he wasn't Mashiach. Okay? There's that group of people, and I think from the Jewish perspective, all you can say to that argument is 100%. Nobody doubts for one second the godliness of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that he was a potential Mashiach. Okay? That's absolutely, he checked a lot of those first boxes. He was a great Torah sage, he led a tshuva revolution, he was a leader of men, he was an incredible thing. But okay, he died. The Rambam says about Bar Kochba was killed. They knew he wasn't Mashiach, they thought he was Mashiach, Rabbi Akiva thought he was Mashiach. It turned out that he was leading a revolution against the Romans, it turned out he wasn't Mashiach. That's group number one within Chabad. Group number two are a group of people that say no. The Rebbe died, and he wasn't yet Mashiach, but the Rebbe will be coming back to life, the Tchias HaMesim, and then he will be Mashiach. Okay? Hence the whole expression, Yechi, Adonainu, Moreinu, etc. Melech HaMashiach. Now, is that a tenable Jewish position, that the Rebbe is dead, he will be coming back to life, and he's Mashiach?
No.
Now, the answer is, it's not necessarily true, according to everybody, but it's not off the planet. The Rambam himself does say that Tchias HaMesim could happen before Mashiach. He says that explicitly. And the idea that the Rebbe could come back and could be the Mashiach, I can't say that it can't happen.
So
one of the big problems with that approach is, once you're already looking to the pool of people who are dead for potential Mashiachs, you've got a much bigger pool. Like, when the Rebbe was alive, then for the Rebbe to be Mashiach, okay, you're dealing with a short list. But now that the Rebbe is dead, come back to life, like you're competing with the Rambam and Rashi and Rebbe Akiva and like David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, like it's a big thing. But if a group of people hold this view, then others may say that they're wrong. But everyone in this world has the right to be wrong. Okay? And you can't really turn around and say it's an illegitimate position, and if people take very strong positions, like you can't eat meat which has been shechted by Chabad Shochtim, and you can't drink wine which has been certified by Chabad rabbis because it's heresy, Avodah Zorah, it's very hard to say that second view is heretical. What's heretical? Which one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim does that transgress? Okay? There's a third, now I don't know how big these groups are. And that's the $64,000 question. There's a third group of people who say, no, the Rebbe never died, he's still alive. Still alive. and they want to say, look, you know, they point to pictures, and you can see, look, back at this person, the Rebbe, there, and here, there, you've never done. Okay? I don't want to say about that. I mean, it seems pretty clear that the Rebbe did die. For a group of people to be saying that he didn't die, in my very humble opinion, seems to be a bit like a denial. Is this some kind of heresy? I don't think so. I don't see what a heresy is. It just seems a bit kind of strange, to say the very least. Okay? And again, that group is there, but I don't know how big. There is a group which is a very small group, and as far as I'm aware, they are not any part of the mainstream Chabad process, but they're out there, which actually go a step further, and they call the Elokistim, and they say that the Rebbe is actually God. And I'm not making this up. You will see stickers up there with the Rebbe's face on them, the classic pose with the hand like this, you know, the Rebbe's face, which says, you know, Rav Schneerson, Hu HaElokim, Hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yoseh Mimenu, you have the whole thing. He's God, he's higher than God, etc., etc. There is such a group of people out there. Now, I'm not suggesting for one second that that group of people is a mainstream group, although I don't know how many people there are, but there's no question at all that that is completely heretical. It's completely apocryphal, completely outside Judaism. Yeah, it doesn't say that there. It doesn't say anything about being God. Look, you know, people have pictures of all the rabbis there. People have pictures of Rabbi Yashir, people have pictures of this one, that one. So why shouldn't they have pictures of the room? There's nothing wrong with it. There's a big tamachokam and a big goggle. The point is that that last group is off the scale. Now, whenever you're talking to someone in Chabad,
have you seen the baby face in his hand? You know the thing?
Yeah.
They're like you can see he was giving a bracha to someone about having a kid, and there's you can see like the face of a baby.
We don't need to say that. You don't need to say that kind of thing about the Rebbe to make out that he was a great person, because he was a great person just to read his writings. Everybody has pictures of the Rebbe. People don't learn his Torah. You know, forget about the pictures and open the Sforim. And you'll read what he says. You know, he's a real person. Not just a picture. Anyway, whenever you're dealing with this Chabad issue, just try and compartmentalize in your mind when you're discussing with someone, okay, which box are you in? Are you type one who says the Rebbe could have been the Mashiach but died and okay, so that's that, okay? Or are you type two that says the Rebbe's going to come back to life and then he's going to be the Mashiach? Or are you type three that says the Rebbe's still alive and type four that the Rebbe's God? So get to grips with that. And people are a bit careful about, you know, they don't always tell you what they exactly believe. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit careful about it because they're worried because they get a bad press. One of the big issues, of course, with Chabad today is, as I said before, since Chabad do enormous good work, it's very difficult, and I think probably inappropriate, to just push aside an entire group of people who do such amazing Mesirat Nefesh for Klal Yisrael and say, oh, you know, it's all heretical, etc. There are a lot of good books to read on this. If you're interested in this issue, I can recommend two specifically good books. One arguing very strongly against Chabad, but, you know, L'shem Shemayim, and one arguing defending Chabad. There's some proper Torah written on this, but that's all I want to say on it for now. Now, look at page 3 for a second. Tchias HaMeisim is also a part of this situation. There is a posuk in Devarim, in Ha'azinu. Ru'u ata, ki ani, ani hu, I am God, he says, ve'ein elokim imadi, there is no God with me, ani amit, v'achia, I kill, and I bring back to life as well. So we see there are remes to this idea that God, the people die, and the God brings them back to life. That's not the Pshat and the Posek. The Pshat and the Posek could be I sustain life, etc. But this is seen as being a remes to the concept of Tchias HaMeisim. We see in the Sefer Daniel very clearly this idea of Tchias HaMeisim of the resurrection. Rabbim Yishenei Ha'ad Masa Afar, number 12. Many people who sleep in the dust. Yakitsu will wake up. Eile lechai olam, some to eternal life. The eile lecharofos for the diran olam, some to everlasting abhorrence, reproach, etc. In other words, there'll be a judgment day, and this is mainstream Jewish hashgrafa. This is not some kind of fringe belief. Tchias HaMeisim is the 13th of the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikra. Therefore, we very much strongly hold by this concept that in the end, the dead will come back to life. And one of the key sources in number 13. Is the following. He talks about the maybe someone could read this because we've got time for this. Katie, you want to read a little bit?
Sure.
Read the English in number 13 because this is very famous. It's the blind and the lame watchman.
In the
Antoninus.
Antoninus.
A very illustrious name, if I say so myself. who was one of Rebbe's friends, Rebbe Yehuda Anossi's colleagues, non-Jewish man. They had a very good chavrusa going, Jew, non-Jew. They had a very good relationship. He's one of the friends of the Jewish people. He said to Rebbe the following.
Antoninus said to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the body and soul can both free themselves from judgment. How? The body can claim, it was the soul that sinned since from the day it left me. I have been lying quiet as a stone in the grave. The soul can say, it was the body that sinned since from the day it left me. I have been flying in the air like a bird.
In other words, each one can blame the other. It's a classic, you know, blame culture. Mm-hmm. The body blames the soul blames the body and says, look, you know. So what does he do?
He replied, I will tell you a parable. To what can this be compared? To a human king who owned a beautiful orchard which contained splendid figs. He appointed two watchmen for it, one lame and the other blind. The lame said to the blind man, I see beautiful figs in the orchard. Come and put me on your shoulders so that we can get them and eat them. The lame man rode on the blind man, so they got them and ate them. Sometime later, the owner of the orchard came and asked them, where are the beautiful figs? The lame man said, do I have legs to walk with?
Sounds Jewish, no? Okay.
The blind man said, do I have eyes to feel?
To see.
What did he do? He placed the lame man on the blind man and judged them together. So too, Hashem brings the soul and throws it into the body and judges them together. As it says, he shall call to the heavens from above and to the earth so that he may judge his people. He shall call to the heavens from above, this refers to the soul, and to the earth that he may judge his people, to the body.
In other words, the mashal is, the lame man is obviously what? The soul or the body?
The soul.
Okay. And the blind man is the body. In other words, the blind man can walk, but he has no vision. That's the body that can physically move, but he has no insight. The soul is the lame man who can see, but has no ability to move. Put the two together, you get the green team, and they will be brought together, since at the end of the day, to be human is to be both physical and spiritual. Therefore, they have to be brought together for judgment. Now, the Rambam was accused during his life of not believing in Tchias HaMeisim. Because think about it, for the Rambam, he's not even mentioned Tchias HaMeisim. Think about what he said. Olam Haba is this soul world where you're, you know, connected to God in a non-physical world. Well, there's nothing about Tchias HaMeisim there. Mashiach, he says, well, nothing about Tchias HaMeisim there. So people turned on the Rambam and said, hey, are you denying this? Do you not believe in Tchias HaMeisim? Come on, come clean, Mr. Rambam. Tell us if you really believe in it or not. And the Rambam was kind of forced a little bit on the back foot, and he had to publish a whole essay where he said he did believe in Tchias HaMeisim, he did agree with Tchias HaMeisim, he said it's supernatural, and it's there. But, said the Rambam, after people come back to life, they'll all die again. Because ultimately, where does the Rambam want them to go?
To the soul
world. So for the Rambam, what is the purpose of Tchias HaMeisim? What is the purpose of resurrection? And an opportunity to do some more mitzvahs. If you went to all the people who were no longer alive and said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to come back for a year or two, would they take it?
Yeah.
I bet they would. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the fact you're going to die in another 2 years, does that matter? Fine, we'll take it. You know, it's an opportunity. The Rambam says, but ultimately they return to the ultimate reward, which is the world of the saints. The Raivad and those other, the more Kabbalistic view says no. The resurrection is the ultimate and final reunion, like the Derech Hashem says, of the soul and the body, which will be together, coexist forever, for all eternity. And therefore you have two very distinct views. Turn to page 4. I put it out for you in a kind of summary. And the destiny of the world, that sounds very grand, but these are not just these two people. I put in the view of the Ramban, but the Ramban and the Raivad are raising from the same school of thought. They don't agree on everything, but it's the rationalist versus the Kabbalist stuff. The Ramban's view is there's this world, there's a natural Mashiach, there's a temporary resurrection, and there's the final Olam Haba. Whereas the more Kabbalistic, the Ramban and the Raivad's view is there's this world, there's a supernatural Mashiach, and there's an eternal resurrection. Similarly, the path of the individual soul, says the Ramban, is life, death, the soul world, temporary resurrection, death, and then eternal spiritual Olam Haba, and then in the soul world. The Ramban says, no, life, death, the soul world, and then resurrection, and everything comes together. Now, there is a discussion as to how Tchias HaMeisim will happen, and the answer is we don't really know. If you're interested in this particular issue, there's a very interesting book by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. I, by the way, advise you to read pretty much everything that Rav Aryeh Kaplan wrote. You can even get it online. His anthology has been put on Google Books or something like that, so you don't even need to go and buy it. You can just click. I can even send you the link. And he has a book called Resurrection, Immortality, and the Age of the Universe, which is actually about resurrection, immortality, and the age of the universe. And in that book, he talks about those three things, and he has some very interesting perspectives. First of all, part of the book is about the age of the universe and evolution and creation. I think it's very interesting. But he talks about, this was written in the 70s, a long time ago. Actually, it didn't feel that long ago to me, but it was a long time ago. Before pretty much anyone in this room, apart from me, was born. And he says like this, could it be, and he brings sources, he was a big time of Chacham, and a physicist, a scientist, that could it be that resurrection actually doesn't have to be completely supernatural, it could be natural. How can you bring people to life naturally? So he suggests the following. He says, what if there's a tradition in the Gemara, there's been a tradition that there's one little bit of the human body called the luz, it's associated with a bit of back of the neck, which is never finally destroyed. Why should there be a little bit of the body that is still physically not destroyed, says Rabbi Kaplan, so that you can take the DNA and you can clone the person. Okay? Once you clone the person, you can resurrect them, not as like some kind of body coming out of the grave, but as a newborn you. A newborn you, and then you come back to life, and you can do that forever. Keep on cloning people and resurrecting people. I'm sure there are people being cloned today, even though it's meant to be legal in most places. I'd be surprised if they're not doing it. And they'll certainly be doing it in the future. And there's also an interesting Shiloh, is a cloned person human? Can you kill them? Do they have an Ashama? Do they count for a minion? You know, simple things. I'm sure there'll be people ringing rabbis in 20, 30 years saying, Rabbi, you've got 9 guys and a clone and we need to daven mincha. What shall we do? Yeah? So says Rav Aryeh Kaplan, maybe Tchiyas HaMetim is through cloning. And he says something else. He says, even if you're missing the last little bit of the body, the DNA is just a sequence. It's a number sequence. So you just need the coding sequence for the person, and then you can recreate the person in the lab. How are you going to get that? Elio Anovi. What do you think Elio Anovi's for? He's a prophet. He's a Novi. So he's the one to give you all the coding sequences for the DNA of all the people.
They're also storing people's codes all the time now.
Electronically.
But how would they get Abraham and
stuff
if we're not even allowed to touch
that? Elio Anovi just needs the coding, the gene sequence, the genome, that's it.
You don't even need that. You can clone people's DNA now. You can
just put it into a computer.
Yeah, for sure.
Fine. So, but what about all those people that existed before computers? Okay, then you need Elio Anovi. Yeah. He just suggested. He's not telling you this is the definitive way of viewing Tchiyas HaMetim. But it's interesting. And by the way, he was writing this before cloning was even a physical reality. It was science fiction when he was writing it. Now it's science fact. Therefore, I'm going to talk about reincarnation just for a minute at the end. But basically, we have two approaches, two world views on this from a Jewish perspective. The rationalist view and the supernatural view. Which one's right? We're not getting into that. We'll find out when Mashiach comes, okay? But they certainly view, there are two different ways of viewing history. Think about the Rambam's perspective. The Rambam's perspective, especially on Mashiach, the human race is doing this. And at a certain point it reaches Mashiach, and it moves from there. According to the other perspective, the miraculous Mashiach, the human race is doing this, okay? It's going downhill, and then Mashiach comes, and it goes like this. You see, this is two whole different perspectives on humanity. Do we think that every generation is getting lower and lower? Or do we think that every generation is getting higher and higher? The United Nations is messianic for the Rambam. And by the way, they know that. That's why they wrote the posuk from Yeshayah on the United Nations.
Yeah.
They know that. It was a posuk about Mashiach and they wrote it into the building. Okay, it might not work, it might be flawed, it might be biased and political. Okay, say then. So it's not yet Mashiach. But the concept of people discussing rather than killing each other is Mashiach. Now, just one last view on reincarnation. Reincarnation meaning, can you come back as a soul into bodies again and again and again and again and again and again? So this is not brought down by the Rambam anywhere as one of the 13 principles of faith, and is really rejected by most of the early Rishonim. From a Kabbalistic perspective, this is a mainstream view, and therefore the Kabbalistic, more mystical perspective, see Gilgulim, as a real Jewish understanding. If you ask anyone today, does Judaism believe in Gilgulim? Almost certainly the answer you'll get is yes. And I've brought you sources which I've not got time to go through, which shows it's a very mainstream view there, Hashem, even Mr. Brewer, etc., etc. But I just want you to be aware that there were sources that actually rejected the idea of Gilgulim earlier on in Jewish thinking. Unlike resurrection, Tchiyat HaMetim, which is mainstream for everybody, Gilgulim is a little bit more controversial. But today, I think we mostly live in a Kabbalistic world, which means which goes with Gilgulim very strongly.
Reincarnation.
The idea that your soul can come back in a new body again and again. By the way, that also raises interesting questions. If you come back multiple times, what happens with Tchiyat HaMetim? Which body do you come back in? You know, if you've been married to this one and this one and this one and this. Okay, they're all questions which you don't need to. There is a funny little book, actually, called When Mashiach Comes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's in print anymore. But he asks all these really interesting but slightly irrelevant questions about Mashiach, etc. Like, you know, which person would you be married to if you had three husbands when Mashiach comes? And he brings sources. It's an interesting little book, but a little bit kind of...
We have it.
Oh, yeah?
It was really weird. We couldn't figure out what was going on in the book, and we were like, is this, like, kind of...
It's not really a mainstream Jewish book.
Really,
but yeah, one last question, then we'll go. Just go back away for a second. Yes.
Because in the, I don't know which one it was, but you said that you're going to have, like, it's going to be you, and you're going to have your own thoughts and your own ideas.
Yes, yes, yes.
But with the concept of reincarnation, like, you had different thoughts and different personality if they believe in that kind of stuff. So, like, what does it mean? Are you going to just, like, combine your knowledge?
I don't know the answer to that question. Since reincarnation is a deeply Kabbalistic idea, and it's discussed at length with the Arizal and by other Kabbalists, you need to get a Kabbalistic perspective on that. In order to do that, you have to ask a Kabbalist or learn Kabbalah. You're asked either of those, I'm not going to be able to help you with, because I'm neither a Kabbalist nor learned in Kabbalah. Yes, because they're the same thing.
If
yeah.
The Mashiach comes, and people are surrounded from the dead, and you have to see your ancestors, and it was in some way physical, at what age would we be deceived? Like, how would you see someone?
That's a great question.
Would you see them as a prime of their life?
I don't know. I don't know. And this book, when Mashiach comes, kind of deals with it. On one level, it seems a bit of a waste of time, people coming back to life, like, 5 minutes before they die. You know? What's the point of that? On the other hand, people being cloned back to life as newborn embryos also seems like, you know, his grandpa, and let's kind of bring him up and what have you. So I don't know. It's a great question, but the Rambam, and I'll leave you with this story of the Rambam. The Rambam says, even though Mashiach is a critical hashkafic part of Judaism, the details about Mashiach don't help with anything. They don't help with your Yerushalayim, with your Avas Hashem. They just lead you off in a, like, a tangent of discussions about fairly irrelevant things. From a Jewish perspective, it's much more important to be spending your time and energy not talking about Mashiach, but talking about mitzvahs and helping people and being a better person and not speaking Lashon Hara and all the things that we're meant to be doing, rather than speculating on all these fascinating but actually at the end of the day unanswerable and fairly irrelevant questions. But I agree, it's very interesting to talk about them, but you're never going to get a good answer until somebody comes out of the grave and you'll know. Hi! And you'll have your answer. But when that happens, then we'll probably be in a different world anyway. Alright, I hope you enjoy your stay, and we'll leave you there.